I'm so excited for all of you to be here today. My hope is to just be bold and authentic with you and share my story of how God has redeemed me and given me this heart and passion to help women find freedom. And I hope that you leave here encouraged to talk about pornography with the women in your lives. Let's start. I want to share my story with you all today of how I got here. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and I went to church, but the church didn't preach the gospel. It was very works-based, be perfect, that's how you get to know God. So I didn't have a relationship with him, and I entered into college and was date-raped my freshman year of college. So I just entered into this depression and questioning God. Did he love me? Was he there? Did he care about me at all? And through this journey of trying to find answers and healing, I ended up at CRU, a college ministry, and heard the gospel and fell in love with God and began this journey of healing. And so through that journey, I had a lot of questions about sex. My parents didn't talk to me about it. It was very shameful. And for example, when I found out about sex from my friend's brother, I wasn't allowed to see my friend anymore. So it was just this shameful, not talked about thing. So after my abuse, I just had so many questions and I started Googling, and that is what led me to pornography. And so I share all of that because it's one testimony of how someone gets involved with this. And so I lived in secret. I didn't even really know that it was a sin, because I hadn't heard anyone talk about it outside the context of men. Only men struggle with pornography. And so here I was, a new believer, trying to figure it all out, and I finally went to a women's Bible study with CRU. And a woman went first and shared her story with us, that she had been freed from an addiction to pornography. And because she went first, I was able to go second and say, me too. And from that moment, she started discipling me, and I began this journey to freedom. Eventually, I started my blog because I couldn't find resources for women that talked about sexuality, sexual abuse, and addiction, all different forms. And so I started this blog. And recently, we just launched this new Bible reading plan. It's on the YouVersion Bible app. And I share this with you because it's had over 10,000 readers since it's been launched. So this is an issue that is popular and needs to be talked about. So you can find that on the YouVersion Bible app if you search Freedom from Porn for Women. So pornography is not just a man's problem. And I really hate when I hear that only men struggle from the pulpit, or it's only addressed as an issue of a woman struggling when her spouse is addicted. But this is an issue that women in all life stages, all ages, are struggling with, and so we need to talk about it. So let me read you some of the stats. So 1 out of 3 visitors to adult sites are women. 7% of all women struggle with pornography addiction. 89% of women struggle with masturbation. And normally they're partnered together. You don't normally see one struggling with one and not the other, but sometimes. And 70% of women keep their sexual addictions a secret. So how does the addiction start? So 71% had their first encounter before age 15. And I was just talking to someone at the last session that she read that it was at age 7. So it might be even younger. Sex is the number one internet search item for kids under 18. And so they have questions and they're curious, and we need to talk about it. So let's look at how it starts. We have internet searches. So that's kind of curiosity, trying to figure things out. Magazines, novels, ads, family and friends. How sad is that? TV, movie, internet accidental. So that would include pop-ups or spam. And boyfriends. So some relationships, they look up how to do things. And not only do we not want them to partake in these activities outside of marriage, but it also is going to hurt if they do get married someday, because porn is fake. And so they've been watching this fake, and then they have bad expectations for when they do enter marriage. And so we just want to help our women prevent some of these ways of starting and then help them recover once they do enter. So why do we need to talk about this, especially in our church? There are women in your churches, in your Bible studies, who are struggling with pornography. And so we have to talk about it. Sadly, the influence of porn in our churches is almost just as dominant as it is in the world. 34% of church-going women intentionally visit pornography. And so if we don't disciple these women, if we don't disciple them in what the Bible says about sexuality, the world will disciple them. And so that becomes our role, to disciple these women. Is the female addiction different from the male addiction? So before the internet was on everybody's device and we could get pornography with a swipe, I would say yes, they were kind of different. Mostly men would be more likely to go into a standalone store and check out videos and stuff like that. But now that we're in the internet age, it's pretty similar. The biggest difference is women are more likely to join chat rooms and to watch romance movies and read romance novels, which some of you might not consider pornography, but it is a type of soft porn, they call it, that could actually lead to bigger, harder porn. The biggest similarity is both men and women are visual. And so when you think back to the 90s when we had this purity movement and the purity culture and the I Kissed Dating Goodbye book was popular and all of that, we started to see this message of men are visual and women, you need to dress, you need modestly, you need to protect your brothers. And yes, we want to help our brothers out, but when we say it like this, when we disregard that women are visual, we're hurting our women. In fact, we're creating this shame. They're already experiencing so much shame, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but we don't want to put more shame on them for thinking that something's wrong with them when they say they're visual, when they're struggling with pornography. So we just need to be careful about how we talk about this issue with our women. So what happens in the brain? So just like any addiction, it starts out with a dopamine release, which is a pleasure chemical in the brain. And over time, the woman will just want more and more of it. She'll develop a tolerance. She'll become desensitized. And so maybe she'll start out with the chat room or the romance novel, and then it won't be enough. And so eventually she will go to those harder porns. So I share that because it's important that we talk about all levels here. We need to talk about 50 Shades of Grey in our church and talk about that with our women so that they have this safe place to go and talk about it, or else the culture will be discipling them. Some common characteristics of addicts: shame. This is the biggest one. Sexual addiction is not something a woman just wants to freely talk about. It takes a long time for her to feel comfortable to share it. She is experiencing so much shame, thinking that something is wrong with her because our church isn't talking about pornography for women, just for men. Another characteristic is secrecy. So sexual addiction is something you keep to yourself. And especially because of the internet, I mean, it's hard for someone to find out that you're struggling with it. And so it's so easy to live in secret. Depression, thinking, will I ever get over this? Maybe she's been battling it a long time. A negative body image. Porn is fake and edited. The women, sadly, are normally doing drugs and are influenced under alcohol, and a lot of them are struggling with anorexia. And so when a woman watches this, she thinks that's the standard that she has to live up to, which is fake. And so we need to teach our women the power of their beauty and that they are beautiful. Bad moods. This one, there's a lot of fear women face. So I was speaking at the Single Summit at Oak Cliff a few months ago. And after my talk, a girl came up to me and she was just crying, saying she finally found freedom from pornography, but her biggest fear is, will a man love me? Will a man forgive me from my past? And she just felt so shameful that no way would anyone forgive her. And so I was able to share with her that a man who loves the Lord will look at you as white as snow. And just the power of the gospel. But this is a real fear that our women have. And I was able to share with her part of my story. So I just got married about 6 months ago, and my husband had never looked at pornography. And so we have a different situation because my story's all over the internet. So he found out everything about me before we were even dating, which is so funny. But I had this fear. What will Zach think? I mean, he just read all of my life. And for him to tell me that none of my past makes him love me any less. And for me to be able to share that encouragement with the young women who are struggling with this is something really powerful. Feelings of failure. Immediately the woman, she might want to stop going to church. She might feel like she's a bad Christian. She might feel like she let maybe her mentor down. So she's going to feel like she failed, especially if it's been a long struggle. Separation. She might not want to spend time with God after failing again. And we want to encourage her that God forgives her and loves her and welcomes her back. Unworthiness. She might feel unworthy of God's love. How could God love me when I looked at porn again? And lastly, other addictions. So she might no longer be satisfied and the dopamine, she might need more of a rush. And so eventually she might turn to more things. And this is how a lot of the times affairs begin. So why is it important to recognize these things? Because that secrecy element, a lot of women, when they come into your office or you're counseling a woman, she won't just straight up say she's struggling with pornography, but maybe she'll share that she's lonely, or maybe she'll share that there's a problem in her marriage, or that she feels far from God and like a failure. So you kind of see these as red flags, and maybe you can overcome, help her talk about it. You can ask her, have you ever struggled with pornography? It's important to recognize so that we can help her be comfortable. And another important thing to note is there's a difference between addiction and someone who's just struggling. So if you think of compulsion is the biggest difference. So if you're talking with someone trying to gauge where they're at, if she isn't willing to stop or couldn't go 3 days without it, she might be more leaning towards addicted. But someone who just maybe is more tempted or is thinking about it, she might just be struggling. And in either case, you still would want to encourage them to talk about it, join a support group, recovery. We'll talk about that later on. And another common characteristic is masturbation. So this is pretty gray area for a lot of Christians. So we have Christians who love Jesus who say, yes, it is a sin. And we have Christians who love Jesus and say, no, it's not a sin. And so we need to be super careful how we talk about it. For instance, say a woman, she just got married and is struggling in her sex life. Maybe sex was shamed for her. She just has no experience. And so they enter into this marriage and She's been told all her life that masturbation is a sin. Instead, we could be using it to help their marriage. Maybe together as husband and wife, she could better understand her body and better help her in her sexuality. And so to just straight off say it's a sin, it just hurts some of our women. Now, there are people who are addicted and it is a sin. And so we want to ask, why are you doing it? Are you doing it lustfully? Are you thinking of someone else while you're doing it? So that would be an example, yes. The Bible says that is adultery when you are lusting. That is a sin. And so just be aware of the words we use. These women are in so much shame already that we want to just be careful to not put more shame on them. So this is one of my favorite resources. I printed out for you a resource list. It's the bigger page, and it has some books, some websites that you can go to for more information. And this is one of those. It's called No Stones by Marnie Faree. And it's about sexual addiction in general, not specific to pornography, but it's amazing. And the point of the book is that sexual addiction is an intimacy disorder. So there's so much deeper below the surface. There's heart issues that need to be worked on. And I want to read to you a quote from the book. So it's not about sex at all, but about the desperate search for love and touch and affirmation and acceptance. Those are descriptions of intimacy. God created us for intimate connection with Him, with others, and with ourselves. And when those connections are broken or absent, women desperately seek a false substitute. Sex or porn is the best stand-in for the real thing. So this issue is more than sex. It is so much deeper. It is about this longing that we were all created to be known fully and fully loved by God. That is our true desire, our true inward need. And so a lot of these women, they don't know that. They don't know that what they've been searching for all these years in relationships or in pornography is a relationship with the Lord. And so as Christian sisters, that is part of our role, to share that with them. So what is our role? To go first. Just like my story, someone had to go first. Someone shared her story with addiction and freedom so that I could go second and feel comfortable sharing. And I know a lot of women who have never dealt or struggled with pornography or sexual addictions might feel uncomfortable talking about it or thinking, well, how could I relate when I haven't struggled? But the fact that you go first and share about something else, another area that you're broken. We're all sinners here and we're all broken. And having that authentic relationship and being vulnerable with one another can help her feel comfortable to share. And so we have to go first so that other women will share their struggles. Second is equip. So I shared part of my story, not really having a sex education. We need to equip in our women's ministries our moms, how to talk about sex with their kids. If 7 is really the youngest that kids are looking at pornography, then we need to teach our parents to talk to the 6-year-olds and figure out how to comfortably talk about sex with their kids and create a safe place for them to ask questions later in life. Another thing we can equip is by setting up softwares like Covenant Eyes, and these are on your resource sheet as well. These softwares connect to all your devices, and there's different packages, but some can block all these sites, or they can limit them, but anytime you search something, an email will be sent to your accountability partner to help you stay accountable. And it's so helpful. And so that could be something we could do to equip our women on, there are resources available. We can help you. Next is forgive. So a lot of these women don't know that they're forgiven. They don't know that God loves them and will forgive their sins. And so that is our role, to tell them the good news of the gospel and forgiveness and the freeing power of Jesus. Your ministry will consist of prevention and recovery. So the first two is more prevention. We want to prevent women from addiction. And then the second two is recovery, helping them when they are stuck. So lastly, we can restore. We are called to restore God's design for sex. Genesis 2:25 says, Adam and his wife were both naked and they felt no shame. So this is how God created sex. Naked and no shame. But instead, we live in this culture where it is so shameful sometimes. And our women who are struggling don't know this. They're not experiencing nakedness with no shame. And so women who are single, women who are married, both can experience this. They can experience sexuality the way God designed it. And for this to happen, we have to focus on changing the heart, not the behavior. A lot of times we focus on fixing things. We want to fix. We're fixers. And so we try to cover up sexual addiction with a religious band-aid. We tell our women to pray more or do more, go to another Bible study, when in reality, she might, yes, maybe she'll stop watching pornography, but then she'll just turn to something else, a new coping mechanism. And so we want to help our women heal their heart issues. Because if we don't help her with her heart, the cycle will just go on and on and on. These are freedom resources. These are practical tools that can help you or the women that you minister with, the women on your leadership team. I'm going to explain them. A toolbox. So this is unique for each individual. They're tools you can turn to when you're struggling. So for example, someone might like to go running. Someone might love listening to music or reading books. So she would create maybe on her notes app on her phone a list of different ways, different things she can turn to when she's tempted. Maybe a phone number of her friend that she can call. These are practical things that she can do to try and take her mind off of the temptation and find freedom. Understanding triggers. So we need to understand what is causing her to turn to pornography. Maybe it's a certain emotion. Maybe it's when she's angry. Maybe it's when she's lonely. Figuring out the heart issues so that next time when she's angry, she can be aware. Oh, last time I was angry. Okay. Kind of make a mental note. Halt. Halt is an easy way to remember different triggers. So HALT stands for hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. So these are the four most common triggers to turn to pornography when you're experiencing one of these things. So next time you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, you can remember that. Recovery groups. I go to Watermark and we have an awesome regeneration ministry there. There's other different recovery ministries at other churches, and There's also an online one. If your church doesn't have one, it's called Dirty Girls Ministries. It's on the resources. So I used to lead online support groups through them, and it was with women, five women from all over the country whose churches didn't have resources for them. So we would meet and FaceTime on the computer, and I'd see all their faces, and it really helped them. So that is a great resource. Accountability, finding a woman to partner with you. And if you are an accountability person to someone else, make sure you're intentionally asking the person frequently, how are you doing? Are you still struggling with pornography? Have you felt tempted recently? Because I feel like with accountability, sometimes you set it up and you're excited, but then it doesn't follow through. And so to ask those questions shows that you really care. You really care about your friend. And lastly, internet filters, which I shared, Covenant Eyes. There's another one, Triple X Church. They also have a great website with lots of blog posts and resources for you. So how could the lives of our women change if we started to talk about pornography? Freedom from shame and addiction, restored marriages, families would be mended. Like I shared, a lot of affairs occur through chat rooms and through the internet. So think about those families that could be mended. Women passionate about Jesus. When Jesus changes your life, you want to talk about it. You want to share that with the women in your life. And ministry growth, same thing. If a woman finds freedom, she's going to want to bring her friends to your church. She's going to want them to experience freedom too. We need to point them to Jesus. So a lot of people have shared with me that this seems so hard and there's so much pressure and not knowing the right things to say. But you can take the weight off your shoulders because we aren't the ones doing the healing. Jesus is the one that is going to heal these women. We simply are called to be bold, to be authentic, to share our stories, and to love. God calls us to love these women. And so there's no pressure on us to say the perfect thing, to do the perfect thing. We have to point them to Jesus because he is the ultimate healer. Every Sunday at church, we preach the good news about Jesus. And I just wonder, what if we occasionally talked about pornography for women? What if in our small groups and our Bible studies and our leadership teams, we talked about this and how they could find freedom? Imagine the lives that could be changed. And so I want to encourage you to leave here and go first and to remember that Jesus is the one who's going to break every chain. Together, let's give women freedom. Do you have any questions or comments? Yes.
You talked about romance novels as being kind of a gateway drug for pornography addicts. And I'm trying to think about, well, I mean, obviously whenever you're talking about a topic, you don't just say, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. But I mean, how do you get people on board with, there's so much evil in our world, how do you even communicate that that is a, that that could be an issue for people? And have it taken seriously, if that makes any sense.
Like in your church ministry?
Yeah.
Well, talking about it, start some dialogue, have a conversation, find out why are they turning to these books? How's their marriage? How's their life? Are they satisfied in their life? Just kind of figuring, kind of relate with them. Show them some facts. Show them the data about pornography. Maybe scare them a bit. Help them see that it's an issue. There's a lot. There's a good book by Julie Slattery on, what's it called? It's about 50 Shades of Grey and the problem of romance novels. I'm sure if you Googled that, you'd find it. I forget the exact name, but that book is a really good resource. You could even read it with your small group if you think it's a problem.
As one who came to Christ as an adult and struggled with pornography and specifically through romance novels a lot, you can also just ask them whether or not they've ever closed the book quickly, turned aside with it when somebody else comes in the room, put a page over the cover. It's their own conscience declaring the shame in reading it, which is their confession as a Christian that they're doing something. You know how it is, like even if you're eating the Oreo, which kids walk in, you've done that. All of a sudden you know that Oreo is an issue. Now it's an issue because you're unwilling to engage in conflict or whatever, but it also can be an overeating issue, and it's just an Oreo, which can be a really great thing to eat or a sin. And so if you see the covering shame patterns that we all do, then if you can ask her to kind of identify, have you ever closed it, shut it up? If you ever asked your husband if you read them often, would he say yes or no? If I asked your kids, what are your favorite authors, would they name the ones you read the last three nights? Do you only name the, you know, Michael Conley's of the world? Do you name the Nora Roberts of the world, or do you know better than that as a Christian woman? So she's hiding if it's overuse, if it's wrong use, if it's books they're going too deeply. I did all of those patterns as a new believer, struggling with how to reconcile these things in my life, which I really greatly loved as escapism. But it was a gateway to everything else.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think that's so good. And so as a mom, I talk a lot about red flag moments with my kids. Like, we have red flag moments. We have, we're looking at our phone, like you turn your phone over or whatever. You're reading a book, you cover it. Like, these red flag moments, like, you have it. Everyone has it in themselves that, like, okay, this doesn't feel quite right. And so, that's how I talk to my kids about, like, we have those red flag moments. Listen to them.
That's good.
That was good. Thank you.
I mean, it's just a basic that we are thinking about starting a group for women struggling with porn. How do you advertise that best in your church?
Yeah, so maybe at your other women's ministry events, have flyers that they could, or give on a slide, give an email address that they can send an anonymous email so they don't have to come up to you or ask you. I mean, they're definitely there needing it, and they're going to want to find it if it's there, posting it on the website. Very easy to access anonymous places.
They need to be able to find you anonymously without coming up in front of other people. That's what you're saying?
I think that, I mean, you could offer both.
Okay. Yeah. Our church does, for men, they have a pure desire. I don't know if anyone's heard of pure desire. They have a recovery group that meets, it's a small group that meets every week. And then they have what's called Beyond, the Trail of Beyond for women. And so in that, though, so that is the typical men have a problem and women need to, with their husbands have a problem. But I like it Beyond, the Trail of Beyond, they also talk, okay, women, have you struggled with pornography and stuff, too? So I just like that our church has small groups that they offer. They're called care groups. And there's just a list of them, and they tell you what nights they meet, what time they meet, and that kind of gives women a time that they can come. And it's people don't register, and you just kind of show up.
One other way is you can ask the leaders that are in public to kind of preclude you, go before you. So if your pastor mentions it from a pulpit one time as a problem, he normalized it for us. Does that make sense? Have him mention it. Have your adult pastor teaching over here. Have the next women speaker mention it as a struggle. And as everybody pops this women and porn issue, it becomes a normalized thing, let's say, so that the porn class is not over here in the corner hiding.
Right.
This is something we're all talking about. So if you just kind of ask your leadership over the next 2 months before we publish this, and it can kind of popcorn this mm-hmm. word in and take away a little bit of the stigma. It was helpful.
Yeah. Just a comment that you made earlier about, I relate to growing up, my parents never really talked to me about sex, and I grew up in a Christian home, and I just think it's so interesting as I talk to friends, it's very common that parents get very awkward about sex, and they don't want to make things uncomfortable, and they don't know how to do it well. So I don't know if it's even a real question. I'm just wondering, how do moms do that? Mm-hmm. Weird, how does that begin? And, how much do you share your past and, without freaking mm-hmm. your kids out? I'm not a mom.
Right.
I'm curious.
I'm looking at the ninth, but she's just changed. But Mary Flo Ridley has been teaching this for parents to teach their young, 6-year-olds, mm-hmm. that age. I mean, and
it's called the Birds and the Bees.
Yes. Yes. That's mm-hmm. right. The Birds and the Bees. That's the name of it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly. And she's one. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Really good.
I think, too, we, a lot of our ministry, there are young moms groups, there are young newlywed groups, and we just build that into our curriculum. We mm-hmm. say, this Tuesday we're going to be talking about sex and how to talk to your kids about sex, mm-hmm. and we say the word sex and sex, a lot, and we just get, and a lot of the time, what happens is a lot of people feel uncomfortable because I grew up in the same type of home that you did, and I'm older than you. My parents, we never talked about it, and if we did talk about it, it was a bad thing, and so mm-hmm. it gives all these mixed messages. So we, talking to young moms, letting them know that it's not a bad thing, that we talk about mm-hmm. What God says it can be and what it should be in marriage, and then how mm-hmm. do we teach our children about that, to love themselves and their bodies and to respect themselves and their bodies. Yes. So it's just always talking. I loved how mm-hmm. you said, just start talking. If mm-hmm. if sometimes we don't want to be, right in your face, but sometimes we have to be right in your face. If we don't say pornography in church, then mm-hmm. the people that are struggling with pornography are going to feel like it's a bad thing mm-hmm. and it's a shameful thing. And so I think we just sometimes have to be very blunt and bold in how mm-hmm. we speak.
Thank you.
So I'm a mom. Sorry, I'm talking so much. I obviously am passionate about this topic. So I'm a 9-year-old, 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And there's a really good series called God's Design. And it starts, it has for ages 2 to 5, a book for that age, a book from 5 to 7 or something like that, and 9-year-old and over. So I guess they say the average age a child sees pornography is 9. That's the average, which means they see that earlier. Some see it later, some see it earlier. And so what you were saying, you need to talk to your 6-year-old or 9-year-old before. Mm-hmm. You just start it young. And I felt that series is really good because it tells you mm-hmm. age-appropriate things to say for a 2-year-old and age-appropriate things to say to a 9-year-old. So
that's great, cause especially when you're in high school, all of a sudden your mom says, "Yeah, I want to talk to you about sex." You're like, "Whoa, you? No, I only talked to a friend
and
about this."
She's like, yeah.
Starting it early.
And talking in moms, talking to others. Have you talked to your kids yet? We're supposed to talk to our kids. That's what a lot of my friends say. You're already talking to your kids about stuff? I'm like, you're supposed, I think we need to start early, just so that it's kind of more normal talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that could be a casual conversation. I did a pursuit of attendance. We usually live in the country, so my kids grew. When I have one of them in the car with me, it was just a casual conversation with my mm-hmm. And we'd just be driving along and looking at it, and just, and so it's not easy. This is what you need to know. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my gosh, am I saying the right thing? It was always just casual.
Yeah.
And some of them tell me that I did a good job, and some tell me that.
I'm the one who did that.
But just to have it casual, just a normal flow.
That's funny.
And they're going to go, okay, I'm hearing this, and it's not the taboo.
My first real conversation with my mom about it, I was 8. And she didn't even really focus in on a lot of the aspects. I had read a Reader's Digest article about a female mom who had been castrated. And so she used that as a jump start into talking about, this is what your body is. And it's okay that it feels good, but you only do that with your husband. She used it as a jump start into respecting marriage and talked more about it when I was older. and understood more. I mean, I have little brothers. I know we look different, but we didn't push that until I was older and better. But she started with the self-love and the self-respect element and just basic biology. And that's another element to consider. I think it worked for me, but, you know, in terms of considering your own other elements of motherhood and how it goes for you, that's going to be different.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think I have a friend who just recently, her daughter, they found out that she'd been viewing pornography, and one of it was such an innocent thing. Somebody at youth group said something about kissing and French kissing, and so she went home and she didn't want to ask mom about that, so she Googled French kissing, and that led to porn, and she was watching. And, you know, so I think it's just, again, talking, in the cars, that's where my girls and I had so many of our, because they don't have to look at you, and you're not, you're driving, so they know you're not, like, trying to find the expression or whatever, and just, like, not being afraid to say, so, you know, what are the kids talking about? Just to hear from them so that you're always kind of one step ahead.
Right.
For
them to hear you say sex.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, she knows about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a time thing.
Right.
Just another resource. My son started a ministry called Access. Access.org. If you go to that, they now have like parent teen summits. So you can watch these videos for free. Julie Slattery, somebody mentioned her. Mm-hmm. She's one of the ones that they've interviewed, and they have all these different topics, and it's free, or you pay a little bit and get it at any time. And they also now have out these parent guides covering lots of different difficult topics, and they give you conversation starters, you know, for parents with their teens or their younger children. So you just go to access.org, you can get some of those porn, but also, you know, different topics that are sometimes difficult.
Thank you.
And I have a question, Joy. So you were talking about, like, you know, having accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So normally, is that when someone is in any addiction and they're looking for and they're asking for accountability partner, but if, you know a friend or a child or someone is having this problem and you want to be, as a parent or as a friend, you want to be that accountability, that's probably, I'm just going to say, that probably is not going to work. Doesn't it usually have to come from the person who's struggling?
Yeah, it's probably better if it's not forced, if it's something they desire and are seeking out. But if you are willingly saying, I could be your accountability partner if you want me to, that might be a good way to go about it.
Okay.
Thank you. So, well, we are out of time. Thank you, ladies.